Welcome to The Road to Accountable AI. I'm Kevin Werbach, professor of legal studies and business ethics at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. For decades, I've studied emerging technologies from broadband to blockchain. Today, artificial intelligence promises to transform our world. But AI won't reach its potential without accountability, mechanisms to ensure it's deployed in responsible, safe, and trustworthy ways. On this podcast, I speak with the experts leading the charge for accountable AI. Richard Benjamins was, until he recently took early retirement, the Chief Responsible AI Officer, and before that, the Chief AI and Data Strategist at the global telecommunications firm Telefonica. He's been named one of the 100 most influential people in data-driven business by DataIQ, and among many other roles, he co-founded and still leads Odisea, a Spanish non-governmental observatory for ethical and social impacts of AI. In our conversation, we talk about, among other things, Telefonica's multi-year journey towards responsible and accountable AI, the different ways that companies can approach these kinds of challenges, his perspectives on generative AI, and the implications of the European AI Act. There aren't many people out there with as much practical experience at large companies in the area of accountable AI, and I think you'll be interested in hearing what Richard has to say. Richard, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me how you first got into the area of, AI more generally initially, and then responsible AI.
Well, AI more generally, I did my studies and my PhD already in artificial intelligence in the 80s, in the 90s. So that's a long time ago when nobody knew what artificial intelligence was. And then, of course, since 2016, when this came back into society and later in business, that's what I focused. Yeah. So long history in artificial intelligence. And in the responsible use of AI, I came across when in 2017, I was working at a large insurance company. And in my team, there was a small group who looked at bias and explainability. And I thought, before that, I just had a business look at it. Yeah. So how can you use this for businesses? But then I said, well, this is actually important. Yeah? And if you take this into account, and if this is going to be applied everywhere. But when I moved back to Telefonica, I took that on board and I brought it into the company and said, well, if we want to be serious on AI, we should not only look at business opportunities, but we should also look at responsibility. And that's how I came in the field.
What was the response in the company? Because obviously there's some effort that's required and there may be trade-offs in terms of designing responsible systems, dealing with issues like fairness and bias. So what was the response you got?
Well, the response was surprisingly positive. Yeah. So for instance, when we started this effort in 2018 in the beginning, and basically because the company was very vocal on big data and artificial intelligence and the opportunities. And at that time, there were a lot of those scandals about discrimination, the Compass things, this companies hiring people and only hiring male gender. So I thought, well, it's important to make a statement as well. So we brought together a set of departments, yeah, which you have to put together, because this one about, it was an aspirational statement that we wanted to make. Yeah? So we wanted to publish our ethical AI principles, and it took us a month, 4 months or 5 months to agree, yeah, on the set of principles, and then how do you formulate them? Because of course, many commercial people think, well, if we do this, then we will lose, yeah, speed, we will lose revenues, but it was surprisingly fast. So I think we published them in October 2018. A very important lesson, because I've also spoken to many other companies. There are two approaches to make these statements. Yeah, publish your ethical AI principles. The one is a kind of aspirational one. Yeah, so this is what we want to do, and we acknowledge that we're not yet there, but we're going to work hard to be there. And then there are companies that before publishing anything, they want to be absolutely sure that they are already complying with what they're saying. Those companies, they are still discussing their ethical principles, because obviously it's not so easy, yeah, to make sure that you comply with all of them in all aspects. So we are on a journey as a sector, private sector, public sector, as a society, And this is going to be incorporated increasingly more, but gradually.
Absolutely. Well, this is an important point, though. How does an organization ensure, if they actually get principles out the door, that they are more than just aspirational, that they can actually influence the development that goes on?
Yeah, so now you are alluding to ethics washing. Yeah, any company, any organization that starts on this journey will first start with principles. And there is really nothing behind it. Yeah, so you can accuse them as being ethics washing, but in the end, this is the way how you start. And then the next year, you have to do something more. And the next year, you have to do something more. So it's a journey. Yeah? So we started in, let's say, 2018. We published into end of 2018, and we only approved formal internal regulation last December. So it took us like 5 years to do that. And that's not because we had to convince everybody, because there is no experience whatsoever in the world how to do that. So you have to find it out yourself, yeah? And then talk to some other companies who do the same, but they're very few, especially in the beginning. So what we did is actually the first step was we did a training course, yeah, where we explain our employees and most of the people most affected. Yeah? So we're not speaking about only developing artificial intelligence, but also about procuring it on the market, and also about it using it internally, and also about selling it. Yeah. So all those people, and there are thousands of people in our company, they need to understand something about this. So that's what we started with. Then next step, we started about a kind of thinking about the governance. Yeah? So these are the principles, but so who is responsible for it? What are the functions? Do we need a new role in the organization to be able to deal with this? We, of course, like everybody, we started to make a questionnaire, yeah, where we do this ethics impact assessment. And I think we went through like 15 different versions based on experiences with people. Then we brought it out in the wild and we tested it with real use cases and people who are not so involved. And then finally, we decided to run some pilots with a governance model. So do we need an AI ethics committee, or do we need a special role, like we call it, a responsible AI champion? How do you organize this? Is it completely distributed? Is it centralized? What are the things? Yeah? What is the workflow? How is compliance involved? How is ESG involved? So we did really a pilot in four different business units. And based on that experience, we thought we were ready to write really something up that can be then complied with. And that is what is currently the case. So it's a journey that took us many years. Of course, today, if you start a journey, there is much more experience. So it will take you maybe 3 years. And anyway, if you're in Europe, yeah, you have to do something anyway because of the upcoming AI Act, which will enter in force in 2 years from now.
So in that journey, how do you evaluate what's success? You talked about a number of choices, a number of options. How does the organization decide what the right things are to implement?
Well, I think success is that you move forward, yeah, in a positive way. And most, what my experience is, sometimes the process is more important than the result. Yeah. So, of course, the result is that all the systems that you launch, and actually, so we have more than 500 systems every day running in our corporation globally. So it's not like 10 systems or 15 or 4 or 40. Yeah? It's really a huge amount of systems. So you really have to do something seriously in order to understand that. Yeah. Of course, what we now have to do, we start with this, with the new system, where by design, we take this into account, but then slowly we have to do retrospective work on looking at all the systems that we have.
But if you have a question, like, for example, do we have a centralized AI review board for ethics issues versus do we decentralize it out? How do you get to answer some of those questions in an organization?
It depends, of course, whether, I think one of the first things that is important is, are you a provider of artificial intelligence mainly, or are you a user of artificial intelligence? a company like Telefonica or energy companies or financial companies, they are all users, yeah? Pharmaceuticals. And companies like Microsoft or Google, etc., they are providers of this technology. So I think that makes a very a different thing. If you are a provider, and you're a big tech serving thousands or millions of customers across the globe, I think you have to be very centralized. Yeah. You can't leave this locally, because then many things will happen. If you are a user of this technology, it depends a bit on how unified you are as a corporation. I mean, if you have acquired, if you exist because of an emerging acquisition of 30 different companies, it's not so easy to do centralized. But if you are a centralized company to some extent, then it's always good to have a mixed approach. Yeah. So for instance, we have at the corporation at headquarters, where we run several of our global businesses and our support functions, we have a central model where we have an AI ethics committee, and we have certain persons in the central business units, yeah, because they're also central business. There is, of course, finance, there is HR, but there is also digital transformation, all our networks from a global perspective. We have all that centralized. And then, of course, we have operations in 15 companies across the world. And then what we tell them is, here you have a role model, yeah, which you can use. And if you want to use it, we can help you. But given your situation locally, you are free to set up an alternative way of doing this, as long as this is approved globally. So it's a kind of, you cannot impose everything from the top, because it's not one size fits all, but there are certain principles that you have to follow. Well, for instance, we suggest that you have a figure called, actually a role, it's a function of another job called Responsible AI Champion. That is in every business unit that uses, develops, buys, or sells artificial intelligence, needs to have such a function. And this person is the go-to person for AI ethical responsible AI questions across that unit. Now, if you don't use any AI in a certain area, of course, you don't need such a person. If you use a lot, maybe you need three. And it's not even full-time, yeah? So it's just assignment of a new refunction to an existing job position. So that is completely distributed, because it sits in the businesses. And then, of course, you need some structure to organize, to bring those people together, to train them. You need an AI ethics committee. And then, of course, you can have the same. Yeah? You can have, for each big area of business, you can have a separate AI ethics committee, or you can have one centralized for the company. What is the best situation? So actually, there are two factors. One is, do you have enough experts to make such statements? Of course, it sounds like anybody has an opinion, yeah, about ethics and about AI, but that's not what you want. You want people with a mix of profiles, of backgrounds, but you also want to have some expertise in the area. So you don't have always the luxury to have like five committees in the different businesses, because simply it's not yet there. Over time, yeah, there will be much more expert, but today that's a difficult question. And the other part is whether how much AI there is. So if there is 100 systems, maybe with one committee, because it's sufficient. Because it's not a, so you have also two ways of using an AI ethics committee. One is permission-based, and the other is problem-based. So permission-based means anything that will be done by the company first goes to the committee. There is a discussion. Yes, we can do it. No, we cannot do it, or whatever. And that permission based. And problem based is, look, we're working with this AI product. We are discussing about the impact, and we see there are some doubts. Should we use gender as a variable in the model? Yes or no? Now, that's a problem. And then you bring it to the AI ethics committee, and they discuss only about ethics, never about business. And then they highlight, they give recommendations, and then they go back to the team. Now, if the team agrees, then they go forward. If they don't agree, it's escalated to an ad hoc committee where you bring together ethics and business. And in the end, the company takes a decision. The important thing is an informed decision, is an explicit decision, And it's a documented decision. Yeah? So that's the difference by just doing things. So that works. Quite well from the ethics perspective. Now, if you are a technology provider where you have billions of customers, maybe it's more a permission based. Yeah? So we want to build an AI system that analyzes all electronic communications in enterprises. And then we can find hubs of knowledge and hubs, isolated hubs of departments that are not in contact. So that is a product that has, well, potentially serious implications for workers and some ethical questions. So then it's good actually. So if you provide this product to billions of people, yeah, then it's good to have a permission base because the impact is huge. So it's again, it's not the same if you're mostly a user of this technology, whereas a big tech provider. Startups is a different world because they are smaller. And they of course don't have so many resources, but still, if it's high risk, it's important to think those things in advance.
Does the fact that Telefonica is in telecommunications, which is a regulated industry, make it easier to adopt these kinds of practices?
But there are many regulated industries, yeah? And telecommunications is regulated, but finance and insurance is even more regulated, and healthcare is enormously regulated, yeah? So the culture of compliance, yeah, of having processes and systems in place that check things, that is already in place. Yeah. So you can a lot of piggyback on that. If you are a company that is not affected by any regulation, of course, then it probably is harder to start with. Yeah. But I take it to account that we started from the business. We didn't start from compliance. Because at that moment, this was not on the radar of compliance. Today, companies who are aware of upcoming regulation, of course, they will start from compliance.
How does generative AI change the landscape for responsible AI practices in your view?
Technically speaking, not too much. I mean, ethical AI, responsible use of AI, is about estimating the ethical and social impact on human rights by design. Yeah? And now, if that is machine learning with structured data, or whether that is generative AI with unstructured data, you still have to evaluate, yeah, the impact on human rights. Now, the difference is that, let's say, traditional AI is narrow AI. Yeah. So you have a use case and you evaluate the use case. Now, generative AI is kind of general purpose to some extent. Yeah. You can use it for different tasks. You can use it for very innocent tasks and also for very serious tasks. Yeah. And that means that it is different because for narrow AI, it makes sense to evaluate use cases and not the technology. You don't evaluate a recommendation algorithm or a random forest algorithm in terms of ethical impact. Once you apply it to a situation, then you evaluate the impact. And with generative AI, this border is not so clear cut, because I can bring to the market, and this is what the companies do, yeah, the big tech do, a general purpose AI that I can use as a user or as a business for many different things. I can use it for generating marketing texts, which is probably not so impactful, but I can also use it to analyze natural language of patient dossiers and then make a decision for certain patients in terms of healthcare decisions, which is very high impact. I can read, I can record interviews for HR automatically and then have them analyzed by generative AI to see whether I should hire the people. That has a lot of impact. So it's difficult to put an ethical impact assessment on ChatGPT as such. Yeah? So you have to do it. And as a user, that doesn't change, because we never use ChatGPT or generative AI for whatever. Yeah? So we use it to improve this or in our legal area or in our whatever area. So we analyze the use case of this technology. So, but if you are a provider, then it makes a difference. And that's also where the AI Act, yeah, has found a lot of difficulties and coming to agreement. And because if you want to regulate it as one system, let's say as a high risk impactful system, then you also regulate a lot of innocent use cases and the other way around.
Absolutely. But let's say you're in a company like Telefonica that's not the one developing the large language models, but which has a lot of these use cases. And so, you know, a product group says, we want to use a chatbot for customer service, generative AI. How do you think about the addressing those kinds of ethical issues?
Well, there is beyond the ethical question, there is also just a performance question. So if I use a chatbot externally with customers, and I base that large part on existing systems like Llama 2 or like ChatGPT, then I have a significant business risk, not even speaking about ethical, because those things can answer you whatever, yeah? Whatever, they can go into a direction. So what companies have to do is kind of, how do you tame or limit what those systems can say if they are talked to with your customers? That's even only from a business perspective. You don't want, so if we have a chatbot where we can talk with our customers, you don't want them to ask questions about the elections in the US, yeah? And that we make a statement, that your chatbot makes a statement about a candidate or so. Now, how do you limit that? Of course, if you manage to do that, and there are technologies for that, RAG technologies, whatever, where you take your own content, yeah, and then you use that to generate the information, and then you use ChatGPT to have the dialogue and the conversation to put everything together in a natural way, that reduces significantly the hallucination part. But still, it can still have a lot of bias. Yeah. So, bias, professional bias in terms of professions, typical male or female professions, or it can even have, let's say, use language that we don't want them to use, insinuating, things that are not inclusive. So there's still quite some challenges from an ethical perspective. But then what you have to do is, this is my knowing what is your target audience, and then say, okay, suppose that something is going wrong in this direction. So what is the impact on the people it's working with? Is that impact severe or light? What's the probability that it happens? Is it 0.1% or is it 20%? And then how many people are involved? Is it 10, 100, a million, a full nation? So all those things matter in estimating what is the impact. And if you do that by design and in a systematic way, then the risk that something comes out that you don't want is much less. Of course, you can never avoid it, yeah? Because some things you never know in advance. But still, I mean, it's much better to do it in such a way than just do it as quick as possible, put it in the market and then discover, oops, we didn't know this.
What about cultural context, language? How specific do these kinds of mechanisms have to be?
Well, it is true that because those machines, there's this massive brute force calculations with statistical models. Of course, the dominant culture on the internet is English and US. So of course, and many things that it answers, even though in a different language, still the culture that is encoded implicitly in the model is a specific culture. And that has as a disadvantage that smaller cultures can be, have no role, not so much. Of course, in the Spanish-speaking world, there are still 600 million Spanish-speaking people in the world, so still a very large language, not as, of course, by far not as big as English, but definitely bigger than the Dutch. I'm from the Netherlands. Only 20 million people in the world who speak Dutch. So from a language perspective, in terms of words, that can be worked on, because there are initiatives, local initiatives, where people who love their language always put focus on that. So I'm not so worried about that. But the cultural aspect is something that has to be taken into account. As far as I know, that is not a solved problem, but it's a research problem.
So you mentioned a couple times the AI Act that was recently adopted in Europe. How do you see that, or the broader move globally to adopt AI regulations, impacting what companies are doing?
I think it's a very good step, first step. It's a good step in the right and important direction. I think global regulation or global agreements are very important. That's why the EU Act is important, because it covers 27 countries. It's not for one country only. Of course, the world is much larger than 27 countries. And there, of course, there is the US, and there is the UK, there is China, Russia. In that perspective, I'm a fan of the UNESCO ethical AI recommendation, because it covers 193 or plus one countries, including the US, China, Saudi Arabia, Iran. Countries that are very hard to get together, and they are together and they have signed up to an ethical use of artificial intelligence. Of course, this is just a sign up. There's no sanction. If you still do many different things, nothing happens. And that's the situation today. But that situation is also happening with human rights. There are countries who signed International Human Rights Declaration and are not respecting human rights as they should. So this is a necessary step towards a more formal regulation. So I think the Act is a good thing, but of course, it also can be improved to some extent, and is still on paper. There's very little experience with it, what it means in practice. I think a very important thing is this is risk-based, and that the majority of the use cases of AI are not high risk. So they're limited risk, so they have no regulation at all. But there are certain areas where there is potential risk, and those areas are regulated. So from very light regulation in terms of, if you make a deep fake, you have to say it's a deep fake. You can't claim that it is for real. There's transparency obligation. If it's high risk in terms of impacting human rights, so for instance, if I want to use AI to hire people or to fire people or to accept students or to give a loan, determine the interest rate or whether I accept people for a loan, a mortgage, medical applications, so everything that is essential for people. If you use AI for those specific things, then you need to comply with certain requirements before putting it in the market. So the data should not have bias, should have quality, should have human oversight, the adequate human oversight. You should log the system, in the sense that if something happens later, you can investigate whether there was a problem. So it's a set of requirements that have to make, you have to take into account, but only for high risk use cases. And then there is unacceptable risk, and those things are outright forbidden to do. If you do that, you have to pay 35 million or 7% of your global annual review. And then there is the part of general purpose AI, so generative AI, which they have put in later. And they have struggled a lot with the fact that the AI Act was based on use cases, and suddenly there is a system that you can use for many use cases. So I think that if you use generative AI for high risk, then you just do the same thing as you have to do for any other system. You have to assess the impact, you have to comply with certain things. Now, if you use a third party for generative AI like OpenAI or Microsoft for your use case of little risk, nothing to do, from the user perspective, from the company perspective. But if you are using it for high risk, then you have to comply. And that means there is a transparency obligation towards the provider that the provider has to say, okay, this system is trained on this data. I've done this checks on bias. I can monitor, etc. So that is a kind of tension that is written in the law, but we don't know how it spells out in practice. And then if you are a provider of such a model like OpenAI or like Microsoft, then they speak about systemic risk systems. And that means systems that are so big that they actually can create an impact in society at large. And there are some requirements on top of this system. So they have to have a system of notification, they have to an alert system, they have to check periodically the data, etc. And they have to report on those things to the European Commission. But how they check and what they check is left to the industry. So it's a kind of hybrid self-regulation, formal regulation, and that is definitely a compromise between different perspectives. And in my view, and that's my personal view, is an incorrect discussion, because it speaks about either you innovate or you are responsible. Yeah. So if you want to innovate, you cannot be responsible, because there are other countries, yeah, who are not responsible and they can innovate faster. So that's a kind of discussion that's put up, like the US innovates, China copies, and the EU regulates. If you speak about responsible AI by design, so regulation by design for high risk things, that means that in all the way, in all the process that you build things like ChatGPT or whatever, you start thinking already, oh, what could be the impact if things go wrong? Or what about hate speech? How do I train? So you think in advance about all those things. And then in the end, what comes out of it is probably a more responsible project rather than correcting it once it in the market. And also think, if you launch something to the market and you discover a problem, which has happened several times with Google, with the generative AIs they put in the market, actually impact and the cost of repairing that is much higher from all perspectives than if you do it while you are designing. And then there are actually several business benefits from doing innovation in a responsible way. So it's not doing either you innovate or irresponsible. No, you innovate in a responsible way. And if you do that, society is more and more requiring companies to be responsible beyond profit. We see that with climate change. Climate change is actually a business factor. And now at this moment, investors look at your climate rankings and ratings and emissions before they invest in you. So there is a trend that even your customers value not only your profits, but also value your responsibility. So if you're responsible and you show that, and actually you do it actually in practice, that's a positive point. The same for your employees. So employees become more and more aware of those things, and they want companies that not only make money, but that also have a responsible role in society. So that also is actually a business benefit. If you are a responsible company and you've thought about the things, actually governments who are also your customers, they talk to you more, they ask you for support when it goes about regulation of AI, they want to have your opinion. So you create actually a better relationship with the public administration, which always is a large buyer of many companies. So of course those are not so intangible that they appear on the balance sheet, but I think those are all recognized factors that are positive.
You recently left Telefonica, although I know you're still very involved in this whole area of responsible AI in various contexts. Tell us what you see as the biggest issues going forward that companies and other organizations need to focus on.
I think on the short time for companies, it is, depending of course where they are, but in Europe, it's be prepared for the regulation. Yeah. and that for some companies it's going to be like the GDPR was, a lot of work. So it will be a lot of work, but it is not something completely new. Yeah, we're kind of copying the process we did for GDPR with a different content, some maybe a bit more difficult some aspect. But so it will, that is, I think, one of the things that is coming from a company perspective. Yeah. I think another thing that is should be coming and is maybe not yet coming are more the indirect and more global effects of the use of artificial intelligence. So what happens to the future of work? Is in the end creating more work, or is it creating less work? If it creates less, so what does it mean for the financial sustainability of states? Because there will be less income taxes. Is this the time for robotax? Is it the time for UBI? So those discussions are not dealt with at the moment with regulation, but I think they are important. There is also an issue on equality and gaps. So this is a very powerful technologies. It helps increase global GDP. It helps increase national GDPs and also market caps and profits of companies. But if you look at how this wealth is distributed, then it's ending up in a few countries and in a few companies. So there is a challenge on how to make that a fair system in the long run. Otherwise, if we keep going as we are, so the companies who are doing this now, they will become bigger and bigger and bigger and more powerful and more powerful. And they will become richer and richer and richer at the expense of other people. Yeah. So the question of leaving nobody behind is very important here and is not dealt with either. So regulation takes things into account of the direct impact of AI within the scope of individual organizations, but the global issues that survive the use of this technology at large, they are still only part of discussions.
Okay, much to think about. Richard, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the Road to Accountable AI.
Okay, it was a pleasure to be here, Kevin.
This has been the Road to Accountable AI. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a good review and check out my Substack for more insights on AI accountability. Thank you for listening.